life on the road. It's
booze, tacos, angry dwarves, strippers waving guns,
and
bees, fights, candle flights, running with the runs,
and
blacklists, bounce checks, great, a bachelorette, drunks in the front, making out through your set,
and
middle acts doing blow more, missing merch,
and
drive the rental car past another mega church,
and
juice, keys, vagina, fist, your cell phone is gone, one big Law and Order marathon.
Let's get going. I have to go pretend I know something about baseball.
GarageBand.
Hey, thanks for tuning to the Road Stories podcast, everybody. I'm your host, Murray Valeriano, part of the All Things Comedy Network. I'm just going to introduce these guys because I got a lot of stuff to explain. So I'm really glad to have back on after all these years, Lou Santini, everybody.
And I appreciate you having me on, man. It's a pleasure to be here.
Absolutely. I'm glad. I know we went back and forth several times.
Yeah, schedules, it happens.
I know. It's what happens when you're busy.
It's busy.
Unlike Danny Villapando, who
is just hovers over his phone.
You know? Yeah, I was actually picked last minute because I have nothing going on.
So this would be like a walk-on spot.
Yeah, exactly.
She's doing a guest spot tonight. So thanks, guys. Thanks for coming. I'm squeezing this in between a basketball game for my kid and a baseball game for my kid.
Well, look at this. My wife has
not
been
the same
gone
kid,
on a business
though, right?
trip.
Not the same kid.
Yeah.
You're pressuring him. He will do all sports in one day.
Yeah. Listen, man, I've said this before. My listeners know this. I have zero interest in sports.
I was just going to say, you don't have any athletic ability.
You surf?
I don't surf? I have zero interest. That's not really
a sport. That's a sport?
Hell yeah, it is.
Yeah, it is.
And one of the hardest ones, I would think.
I've tried once. It's a sport.
I'm terrified. I could never do it.
It's a lifestyle. It's not a sport. It's a whole argument in the surfing community.
Wow.
But I don't do anything with a ball. And my kid...
Well,
hey, yeah. Oh.
That's not what we heard. Hey, they were here all week. Comedians, when's you give them an opening?
So my kid has basically inherited my athletic ability. So, and he has yet to have self-awareness. He doesn't realize he's sucking yet.
How old is he?
7.
Oh, yeah.
I think everybody sucks at 7.
Yeah.
I
mean,
no.
Except Tiger Woods, maybe. You know.
There were some kids in basketball today who were doing like half court Metal Arc Lemon shots.
That's a very good point.
But they also have fathers who secretly hate them and push them.
Oh, that's true. You know what? They do.
Yeah.
That's true. Because I've seen some dads like yank a 7-year-old and I'll be like, put your arms up and guard that ball. You get that ball. That ball is yours.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's not a love for sport. That's fear of sport.
That's just being like, pressured into sports. You know,
I'm like, only another 20 minutes and then you get pizza. Let's do it.
I mean, I was
never good at anything because my entire life, my parents encouraged me to quit everything.
Oh, really?
Your parents encouraged you to quit?
Quit everything because it would cost them money to buy a glove or anything else. They go, hey, look, if you don't want to do it, you kind of suck at it. You should just stop.
You know, that's interesting you say that because somebody was telling me, I wasn't really paying attention, but because it was
nice
sports.
I'm still laughing about that. My parents were the exact, they weren't pressure, but they were like always insisted that I see things through. Even if I failed, finish what you start, give it a shot.
Yeah,
don't be a quitter. Yeah.
My oldest, my second,
I'm surprised I made it here today. You know?
I give up. I can't figure out this GPS.
My brother was the all-star quarterback in high school. Senior year for all the colleges came out to scout him. He ended up breaking his clavicle and couldn't play. My dad, baseball player, won the Little League World Series in 1955.
Whoa, wow.
9 of the people he played with went on to be professional.
Get out.
I joined the marching band.
Yeah. So. And now you're hosting a podcast with two comedians, and one of them, and you don't even consider surfing a sport anyway. And one's a quitter.
So I have to go up.
What did you play in the marching band?
Bass drum. And then bass in the jazz band, and then percussion in the stage band.
Why did you do finger quotes with
Because
percussion?
I never was allowed to play in the stage band because I didn't know it well enough.
Oh.
All right, long story short.
So you were just there for the chicks.
Oh, yeah. I was there for the band chicks.
You know band chicks.
Let me tell you, I got more action.
Watch how that girl holds a tuba. Oh, my gosh.
I got more action in the back of a band bus than I ever did on a Saturday night date.
Really?
Oh, absolutely. That and a
the horn players?
That and a youth group van. A youth group church van on the way back from...
You said band bus, not bang bus. Right?
No, band bus. Band bus. Let's keep it clean. As clean as we can be. Anyway, what a weird avenue this took.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, I have to apologize
for
last week's episode, which didn't make it to air. There was Jonas Garvin. Do you guys know him?
No.
Jonas Garvin was on the wagon for a month. And then decided to go off the wagon the night before and continue through the podcast recording and was hilarious because he was hammered at noon. And it was funny. It wasn't bad. It's just that we ended up talking about Dylan McKay from 90210.
Luke Perry.
Yes. We ended up talking about Luke Perry, and he was, you know, just, which would not have been at all inappropriate if Luke Perry didn't die 2 days later.
What are the odds of that?
Wow.
Yeah, so,
how did that even come up in conversation?
I don't really know. So when I went in to go edit out the Luke Perry stuff, and again, it was nothing like, oh, Luke Perry's a fucking or anything like that. It was just it was just inappropriate because the guy unexpectedly died.
Yeah, that's good.
I went in.
How dare you as a comic have good taste and judgment?
I know.
Wrong.
So I went in and edited it, and when I was editing it, the system crashed and I lost the whole thing.
Oh.
So I apologize for last week. I already apologized to Jonas, and Bronston Joan was on, and they'll come back and we'll do it and we'll have fun. And whoever we talk about
and
hopefully won't die.
The exact magic.
Well, here's where that comic made his big mistake is he goes on the wagon for months. Mm-hmm. I just go on the wagon
for a month.
I just go on for 3 to 4 days.
Right.
This way you can still keep your alcoholism in check.
Sure.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
It's a smart way to do it.
I run steadily along with the wagon. Sometimes I jump on, sometimes I jump off.
Exactly.
Sometimes
I
jump on, sometimes I jump off. That's just how it is. I'm kind of on the wagon now, although I only drink at shows. How's that for a job? Right? Not bad. If you can drink while you do it, that's a good job.
Well, a lot of times at shows, you get the free drink, and you're like, well,
I know. I can't say no.
Can't say no to that.
Free drinks don't count. They don't count
because they are free. That's right.
They're free.
Right.
Right. They just don't.
Oh yeah.
God, yeah. I didn't pay for it.
Yeah. So that count as me drinking.
Yeah. I didn't technically.
Yeah.
There's no way I can blow 0.08 when I get pulled over. It doesn't count.
You know, it's funny. Now that I get older, it's not that I drink more because the days of me getting like hammered and waking up like, oh, I feel like death. I mean, I don't go. I don't really remember ever going out of my way. Like, tonight, I'm getting messed up.
Right, right.
I never did that because you know, it happened.
Sure.
But now it's like I find myself like, I can have 5 drinks if I start at 8 p.m., but if I have 2 drinks starting at 11,
you're screwed.
I'm messed
up.
No,
that's the truth.
I'm like, why did I start drinking at 11? You know,
that's the truth too.
Because you go through your hangover at 4 p.m.
Yeah.
And that's because you're still awake at 4 p.m.
No, a.m., you mean?
Well, you said you start drinking at 11. You mean 11 a.m.? Oh, 11 p.m. Yeah.
Oh, 11 a.m.
Like, oh, I thought you meant 11 a.m.
No, wow. Like, so before I would start drinking, I would maybe...
What else did your parents teach you?
Well, I would have like 5 drinks, 8 o'clock, you know, spread them out over time.
Yeah,
have
some
food. And I'm like, hey, I feel okay. You know, but like last night I did a show and I don't drink until I'm done.
Right.
One drink will mess up my
timing. And you're a Jack Daniels guy? Doers?
No. I'm a whiskey guy. That's the one I won't have.
Oh, it's nasty.
Real quick, nothing against... you're not sponsored by Jack Daniels, are you?
No, not today.
Well, just like, you know, I'm kind of a whiskey snob. I mean, I have a bar at my house, and I always have 4 or 5 that I'm always trying new stuff.
Sure.
I'm a member of a whiskey club. I have one vice. I'm not married. I have no kids. Give me something.
Nobody's pointing the finger.
I can have 5 good 12-year, like, Redbreast Irish whiskey. Nothing. 2 Jack Daniels, and I will find a reason to take my pants off in public. There's got to be some kind of ingredient in there.
It's like, kerosene.
What is it about
it's
Jack?
It's actually kerosene. Is
even
it
like
is.
Gentleman Jack, which
right.
is a step up.
I know,
which is
supposed
good.
To be the good stuff.
Yeah, but Jack Daniels, I just can't.
Oh, it just smells like high school parties to me.
I can't
stomach that
I'd rather
that
drink
stuff.
Like Rite Aid, you
yeah.
know.
I was a single
bottom shelf,
plastic jug,
giant
handle.
Jug,
$5 for 2 gallons.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was a single malt scotch. I still am. That's my favorite drink, single malt scotch. And I think my listeners have heard this. I would come home after shows, Irvine, you know, where I get home at 2, have just a glass of scotch, maybe 2, drift off to bed around 4,
right.
sleep till 11. But then when I had the kid, like I can't. Scotch has been on hold because I don't. And I've been drinking, you know, for a long time, you know, before it was I was allowed to. So I can tell you where I'm at with beer every time.
Yeah.
I can tell you where I'm at with vodka. I can tell you where I'm at with wine. Single malt scotch, it can be 1 glass or it can be 4. And there's never the same road twice. And it's not even a drunk. It's just waking up feeling it the next day.
You know, I make recommendations on my podcast too every now and then when I try something. Tomatin, have you ever had that? Mm-mm. Single malt scotch?
Oh, no.
Affordable. And what's funny because the very first time, are you a scotch drinker, Danny?
I drink everything.
Okay.
Danny's just a drinker.
I'm just a drinker. I don't discriminate.
Scotch,
I'm not that person.
First time I ever had scotch specifically, when I opened the bottle, it smelled like Band-Aids. It did.
Oh.
Very specific. And I remember going, I think this is spoiled. I mean, can scotch go bad? And it was an expensive scotch. It was Lafroy.
Sure. Oh, yeah,
and
nice.
Once you had a couple of them, you're okay. But this is it kind of smoky, and it actually finishes kind of sweet.
Mm-hmm.
So Tomatin, I would recommend that.
It smells like Band-Aids because when you get drunk on it, you fall. You're wounded. your wounds self-heal themselves. That's why it smells like Band-Aids.
Yeah. On the rare occasion when my wife and I are out on a date or whatever or at a party and I order a single malt scotch, I get it. And then I just hold it out to the left and she leans over and sniffs it and just goes, ugh. Every time. Yeah, it's like Mr. Joshua with the lighter under the arm. And
there's a reference, Lethal
there's
Weapon.
There's a weird Lethal
wow.
reference.
But the Whiskey Club, I'm a member of up in Calabasas. I have this new one. I spent more in this bottle than some people do on rent. I'm not proud of that.
Sure,
but
no,
again,
I hear you.
They keep it locked up. So it's, you walk in, it's, you know, you have your name on it. You can name it whatever you want and have it. Middleton.
Ooh. Is that what you named it?
No, the name of the whiskey is called Middleton.
Oh, okay.
It's an Irish whiskey. It's so smooth. I'm like, man, I'm glad this is locked in a cabinet 45 miles away from me. Seriously, because I'd be pouring it into cereal. It is so smooth, man. It is so good.
I want to go to that whiskey club with you, even though I'm not a whiskey drinker.
Double Barrel. It's called the Double Barrel Whiskey Club. It's in Calabasas.
I've heard of it.
At Saddle Peak Lodge, and now they just opened a new one in Beverly Hills.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, closer for you.
Yeah, I have not been to that new one yet, but my whiskey's over in Calabasas. So. Here's how selfish I am. During all the fires we had, all I kept thinking was like, I hope my whiskey's okay because it's over there. And I didn't want to call. I was like,
right.
So I would call and just like, they picked up. That's all I need to know. The restaurant's still there. You know, all these people are losing their homes. Animals are dying. Forest is going away. But is my whiskey okay? Because I just bought it. It was expensive.
No, I understand. I remember the first time Danny and I did a military tour stateside.
Yes.
And you were the only other one on that tour who drank. And I was like, thank God somebody on here drinks because there is nothing to do.
Well, who else were we with that didn't drink?
Connolly?
Tom Connolly?
No, James P.
No, Tom. Like, we know Tom Connolly. Drinks.
Yeah. I'll drink both of you combined. Yeah. James P. doesn't drink, huh?
James P. stopped drinking like 5 years, 6 years ago.
Oh, okay. I think
not
he's
that he was a he was not a big boozer at all.
No, not at all.
He was just like, it doesn't do anything for me.
He wouldn't hang around afterwards and have a couple. And we would always hang out afterwards, have a couple, and call it a night.
We shut down that bar in Texas on the...
With all the stuff on the ceiling?
Yeah, it was one of those Air Force bases where people lived on it.
Mm, yeah,
and sure. worked on it.
Yep.
But the people who worked on it would leave and not want to come back, so nobody came to the show.
Yeah.
But then they had that one bar on base, and it was like you and me, maybe Maison.
Was it Maison? I think it was Maison.
Was it Maison?
I think it was Maison. Was it an officers' club?
No, it was an officers' club.
It was an officers' club. But all the officers lived just off base.
Gotcha.
So then they would go home at night and nobody stayed on the base.
Right.
So we do the show, then we go to the bar. We've got the thing almost to ourselves.
Yeah.
And then they finally had to kick us out of
there. I don't know if that's good or bad. You have a bar all to yourself. That's kind of depressing.
Well, I'll tell you why it's good. I went up and ordered 3 beers and they're like, okay, that's $6.
Oh, I know.
And I was like, oh, I'm sorry. I asked for 3.
I know.
Like, oh, yeah.
I go back to like my hometown in Ohio and I met with a bunch of guys I did radio with.
Right.
There was 10 of us. And I'm like, first round's on me. I'm thinking, all right, this is going to be $100 minimum, whatever. I had like 7 pint good, you know, foreign beers. And I got myself a couple Jameson, whatever. Uh-huh. And she's like, that's 38. I'm like, there's 10 of us. Spending $1 a drink. You know, but then it was like a happy hour. But still.
Right, second round's on me also.
You brought up a good point. I can't do beer anymore.
Oh, really? Can't drink beer?
I just, you know, here's the thing. Like, if I'm having Mexican food or sushi, it's more of a palate thing. Yes, I will have one with some sake and, you know, a good Pilsner, like a good Dos Equis with some good Mexican food. Yes, one. But I can have 5 whiskeys, never hit the bathroom, 1 beer. It's like I'm in my third trimester of pregnancy. I'm peeing every 10 seconds. It's the carbonation or something. And just like, ugh. And I feel tired when I drink beer.
Your third trimester would be you giving birth.
Oh, got it. So, well,
right?
There you go.
Is that right?
No, because you're still the
best 3 months.
Oh, so
you got to run the whole 3. Really, okay, you got to run the whole
thing. It's a urine birth.
It's a urine birth.
Okay, a pee birth.
But I mean, I don't feel tired when I drink whiskey. Beer just makes me like, I don't want to do anything now.
I don't drink a lot of beer because it makes me fat.
That is also true.
Then you look at me and look at my stomach. See how that is? Both you guys have flat stomachs. I'm a little punchy. I admit it. A little punchy.
Well, I mean, when you drink any alcohol, it converts to sugar.
Right,
yeah,
absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
That whole thing.
One thing I've noticed is, since I really cut down on the drinking, my sugar, like I drink a mocha now instead of coffee in the morning. Mm. Like I crave sugar,
which
is very strange. Because I never crave sugar. I don't have really much of a sweet
tooth. Well, it's funny. We were talking about Tom Connolly. He does that thing. He doesn't drink from the Super Bowl to St. Patrick's Day. You know, wow, 40 days, good for you. But nonetheless, he says during that time, all he wants is like Hostess snacks and chocolate chip cookies. Yep. And you got to get your sugar some way.
Right, right. Last time I quit drinking for a while, I found myself eating a pint of Ben & Jerry's every night.
Oh! Yeah. That'll pack it on.
Oh, yeah. Then I saw myself on taped a set at the Improv. I'm like, well, all right. Well, enough of that.
Yeah.
let's go back to drinking when I was better in better shape.
Are you a neat or rocks guy?
Neat. Neat. Because I like the single, I like the high-end stuff.
I get
That's the thing about scotch. It's not like White Zinfandel.
Oh, no, you're taking your
you
time
gotta,
with
you
it.
You got to pay a lot of money for the good stuff, you know? Yeah. You can't.
And worth it. You've been to $7,000 over here in L.A.?
Mm-mm.
I mean, that is the whiskey place.
Yeah.
They got. And there's another place, I guess, in L.A. that has like a whiskey tour where you ride through, like, It's a Small World at Disney.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, you ride everything.
You're in a little cart?
Yeah, and you taste stuff, and you drive it through, this tour and everything like that, too.
Then they drop you off the parking lot where your car's at.
And the cops just sit there and wait.
You got to do that. You want
to
do that?
Hell, if you don't have to ask me twice.
All right, let's do that.
Or if you don't mind, said, you know, either meet me at my place. Well, okay, all of you, you're also invited, Danny. I don't know if you're a whiskey guy, but not just because you haven't expressed
it. I think we've discussed this. I drink everything.
Everything? So. Yeah, but you don't want someone who drinks everything drinking your expensive. Yeah, whatever. Pour it in a mug.
I'm not shooting it. I'm cordial about it. I sip it.
Okay.
I watch what you guys do first. It's like the fork salad. I know what I'm doing.
So you're Julia Roberts and Pretty Woman at the dinner table.
Yes.
Oh, oh, oh. I was a listener named Casey Williams, who's a comedian, produces a great show up in Northern California, Sally Tomatoes. I don't know if you guys have ever done it. Anyway, I'm doing it in a couple of months. It's great. The first time there, he knew I was a single malt guy. He's a whiskey guy like yourself. And he brought me a bottle. It might have been an Alexander Murray. I could be. Casey, if you're listening, I apologize if that's wrong. But like a nice, like a $700 bottle of scotch. And we had a little snort in the parking lot, as you do when you're classy.
Yeah.
Before the show. And then we went out afterwards and went to a bar and we went to an open mic and we're hanging out and we're drinking all these shitty drinks. And he's like, I'm going to go back to the car and get that bottle of scotch and we'll sneak it into the bathroom. And I'm like, go for it. So he went in and he like poured it in and he poured and there were some
drinking high end scotch in the bathroom.
Yeah.
That is classy.
No, you just fill it up in the glass and then
Days when you'd go do bumps of cocaine in the bathroom, but now high end whiskeys.
Hold on, this story's just starting.
So we killed this hooker, right?
Yeah. So he brings back and there were some, I guess, friends of his or some people from the show were there. So he brings out like 5 shot glasses full of this nice, you know, sipping and we're all sipping it. And this drunk girl comes up and she's like, what's is that for me? Like, yeah. She's like, and shoots the whole thing. We're like, what? That's $700 scotch. You sip it. She's like, I'm Irish. She put some brown liquid in front of me. I'm shooting it. And walked away. I was like, that woman rocks.
What's the most expensive? I know nothing about wine. Wine just seems too complicated to learn.
And it's obnoxious to talk about.
Yeah, and I don't like the taste.
I have a box of wine in my fridge as we speak.
Oh, you are classy.
Yeah, I am very.
But just like, because my friends who like wine, they say, look, there is, of course, a difference between the $10 bottle of wine and the $50 bottle of wine. But there's not much of a difference between the $50 and the $250.
Oh, yeah.
I find that is different with whiskey.
Yeah.
Your thoughts?
I agree. I wouldn't, when I was waiting tables, my friend was the beer and wine buyer for the restaurant. So we used to go to all these lavish, you know, at the Beverly Hiltons and all this stuff where you go and try everything. And I'm telling you, between at the time, a $20 bottle of Santa Margarita would taste just the same as a $500 Coppola. It was, I'm like, what is the, and it's all in, you know, a lot of time it's all in packaging. I'm sure there's some wine people out there.
Of course.
Like, the tannins and the.
That's how they sound too.
That's how they sound when they start, when you start talking wine and golf, that's how you sound to me.
Wow. Just pair wine drinkers with the golfers.
Yes, absolutely. All just right. As annoying to talk about. And I enjoy them both. So I can be that also.
Well, golf. All right. So you said you don't do sports. True or false, in your opinion, is golf a sport? I think surfing is, by the way. I'm with Danny on that.
All right.
Well, yeah, why wouldn't surfing, I think, is. Because it takes all your physicality just to do it.
And there's competitions for. There's huge money in surfing. I mean, world championship surfer.
Golf, to me, is like bowling. It's a game. It's a game.
Thank you. Golf is a game. Anything you can do while holding a beer.
Right.
Right? I mean,
you couldn't surf and have a beer.
You could play baseball and hold a beer.
Well, I'm just saying, it's like, you know, and do it well. I mean, you can. I mean, how many times you gone out golfing? Like, man, I used when I worked.
Softball turns into a game.
All right.
Because you can drink and play softball.
Right.
Baseball, on the other hand,
why not?
Here's my, by the way, here's my non-joke answer. If to me, all sports should have these elements: speed, strength, endurance, agility, and probably maybe a little strategy.
Right.
Golf, speed. I mean, unless you want to call your backswing, come on.
Have you ever played speed golf?
No.
Oh, it's fantastic.
That'd be fun.
I would watch that, at least, so it's like a timed game.
It was on MTV's Real Sports or whatever it was.
Hit the ball, run. Hit the ball, run.
Just fucking book down the fairway. Yeah. It isn't how many
points. It would take a lot of that overthinking out of it.
Oh, absolutely.
But it should be how many strokes and timed. So that would be a much better sport.
Yeah.
I gave up watching the big four sports 2 years ago, and I thought I would miss it. I don't miss it.
What are the big four sports?
That's football, baseball, basketball, hockey. Some people don't say hockey's a big sport.
I watch baseball and football, but football only because my wife is a nut, and she's in fantasy football leagues. Wow. So based on osmosis, I have to sit there and listen to her gab on about it forever. Yeah,
By the way, I didn't think you could sound any whiter after you said you belong to a whiskey club, but when you but when you list off the top four sports and soccer wasn't one of them,
I actually played soccer for 10 years. I did. I played soccer for 10 years. Yeah.
It's the biggest sport in the world,
yeah,
except America.
I had a tryout with a semi-pro team when I was
football.
Younger.
Football.
Yeah.
Football.
Oh, thank God my kid played that. Oh, thank God that's over. That was a fucking chore.
Now there's an inexpensive sport to put your kid in, shin guards and cleats, and usually they supply
the
uniforms.
Didn't even get them that.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Come on, there were five. What are they going
to... Well, I mean, usually the parents have to pay for the shin guards and cleats. Usually the team pays for the...
Oh, no, we didn't
buy
them cleats.
They don't even know they're supposed to be kicking a ball.
I know.
At that age, they just walk around kicking each other. If you watched an aerial view of five-year-olds playing soccer, you would just see this landmass of 22 kids. Yeah. They just go wherever the ball is.
It's like a pack of ducks.
Exactly.
Maybe if the ball. Maybe. Sometimes a leaf will float by and they'll just, oh, look at that.
No, I love playing soccer, man.
Really?
I just think that, to me, that is the hardest sport.
My mom made me play soccer when I was five, and she made me wear these terry cloth shorts that kept falling down.
Terry?
She made them. She made them. And for some reason, I couldn't get past the no hands thing. And every time they kicked me the ball, I would catch it.
Yeah, well.
Maybe you were using your hands on yourself too much. She put those shorts on you. You never touched yourself again.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's
and
not
the terry
true.
Cloth absorbs
they're
whatever
terry,
happens.
Yeah, they're terry cloth, for Christ's sakes. I mean, come on.
They're very forgiving.
Those are.
Yeah.
The ironic thing, though, is when I ended up playing baseball for 1 year, like 3 years later, couldn't catch a thing.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm on a softball league every Sunday. I got a doubleheader tomorrow. In fact, right, I'm a shortstop out there. Love it.
Oh, yeah?
Love it. Yeah, but I mean, I played soccer. If everyone's like, oh, soccer, it's a sissy sport. I'm like, all right, go play it.
Are you guys one of those people who go and seek out games when you're on the road? See how I tied it back into the Road Stories podcast?
Whatever sporting events?
Yeah, like Proops will go watch like minor league baseball when he's on the road. And
I tried that a few times, but I couldn't fully enjoy it because I was always worried like I was going to be late for whatever I had to be at. You know what I mean? Like if I had to show that night, like, this game goes in overtime. What if there's an issue? Whatever.
You've got two shows in the weekend and you're like, I better get my nap in before I got two shows.
Right. No, actually, last time I played golf, my dad was in town, and it was not this past Christmas, the Christmas before, and I had a open invite to the Lakeside Country Club.
Right by Luke Lake.
And I held it open because I knew once they saw me play golf, they would never ask me back. So I held it open for when my dad came because he's a big golfer.
Nice.
And so we did that nice course. He got really excited. He saw celebrities. It was fun. We had a caddy that caddied for Phil Mickelson for many years. So my dad's still talking about it. Ended up in the clubhouse afterwards, drank a bunch of beer, ate the buffet, get home at like 7:15. At 7:20, Richard from Comedy and Magic calls and says, can you be here by 8?
Oh, boy.
And if it was any other club, I would have said no.
No.
But Richard, I work the Comedy and Magic club so rarely.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm like, all right, Dad, I'm jumping in the shower. You got to drive me.
You leave your own wedding to go play the Comedy
and
Magic
club.
Yeah.
And so sure enough, just kind of buzz there, stumble into the Comedy Magic Club.
You know, the Lakeside Club, apparently back in the day, the Dean Martin, Bob Hope, because Bob Hope had a house right on.
Oh, yes.
Right there. When I first moved to California, I used to ride my pedal bike, just getting a lay of the land and stuff. And I'd see Bob Hope just riding around, his butler or whatever, be driving around on a golf cart.
Like question.
That. Yes.
What's a pedal bike?
Well, I mean, I didn't want you to think when I said bike, like motorcycle or whatever. It's like a regular bicycle.
You hear how unmanly I am. You really think I was think motorcycle when you said bike?
Well, no, because I have one. But I didn't know what you think. I'm riding like this chopper with ape hangers driving around, you know, Toluca Lake. right, Mr. Bob Hope, whatever. But back in the day, Dean Martin and those guys, they used to stash flasks in various shrubbery all over that course.
Oh, Lakeside. I know that.
And they would get hammered and drink. They would have their own little, like digging and burying treasure for their liquor, their high-end liquor or
That's
whatever.
That's funny. These guys are famous and rich, but yet they would have to hide their booze.
I think they just like the idea of smuggling their own good
stuff.
We're
coming up to the ninth hole.
Plus, you know, you're the farthest distance from the club. I mean, you're not going to go drink some.
Right. You don't want somebody else drinking your scotch.
Sure. Yeah.
This is what I love about the Lakeside Country Club. It was started by actors because whichever the old one, maybe Riverside, wouldn't let actors in the early 30s because they thought they were lesser people.
Well,
so the
where's
actors,
our telephone?
Well, I mean,
so the actors opened Lakeside, and the first thing they did was banned women and Jews.
I've done comedy there
at Lakeside.
Yep.
Ooh.
Yeah.
How's that? Rich white people,
conservative, and of course squeaky clean.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
But I mean, they were a good crowd. But I
really,
mean, yeah.
But well, I take it back. I've been doing a lot of country clubs with Frances DeLorenzo, and they're great.
And I've done a few things with her too, and I'm doing something that she booked me on in Yorba Linda.
Yeah.
I probably did that one. Have you done that one? Your Belinda sounds familiar.
I've done every single one of her gigs.
Yeah.
Multiple times.
Yeah.
I've been doing a lot of these comics booking me on these things. Like, just so you know, as soon as you hear, just so you know.
Right, right.
You know, you think, here comes the conservative PC conversation. Are you guys running into a lot of that now? Like with the whole PC?
I did one gig for her at a certain country club where my wife came with me, and my wife wasn't allowed in the showroom because no women were allowed.
No women were allowed.
At this day and age, this was probably 2 years ago.
It was a country club?
It was a country club, and there was a certain bar area where we both walk in, and somebody comes up to us and go, I'm sorry, sir, but she can't be in here because she was a woman. You know, you're welcome to
stay. Maybe he thought she was an android.
Well, it was just weird me drinking alone because I kicked her out. That was the strange thing.
Yeah. So 7 hours later, you got out of there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Picked her up.
I told you to
wait in the car. Baby, wake up. We got to drive home.
I told you to wait in the car. What are you looking at?
Squirrel.
Oh, there's a squirrel living on my garage.
Yeah.
He comes by every once in
a while. Wow, they still have that.
Well, you know,
my
friend's, if my friend dies, his wife doesn't get his membership to Lakeside.
That's crazy.
Yeah. I told them everybody my name was Mark, so they wouldn't think I was Jewish.
I live in Studio City, and there used to be a gym for years. The gym was called, flat out, Women Only. And I remember thinking, is that legal?
Right.
Because if we all opened the gym, you know, men only, all hell would break loose. Are you kidding me? You know, and then I found out later, it's like, well, it's a safe place for women to go so that they don't get, you know, looked at. And I'm like, oh, come on. So it's like, women aren't going to look at you. Who looks at women more than other women? And well, judges them.
You're the there only, was, there you're was the a only guy club. I know mad at curves.
Is curves women only?
Yeah, curves.
Oh,
women
I didn't know
only.
That. I thought that was just for anybody.
I'm not, is it not certain about that.
Is it not?
There was a woman's club a few years back that was a woman's club. And a guy tried to join and he had to sue just to try to get into the women's club.
A gym club, like you mean?
No, no.
Like
a woman's club where they hang out. Business
a social club.
And what a social club, yeah.
What a douche.
And some guy sued to
let
get in.
Let him have it. Come on.
Come on, man. Like, what a douchebag that guy is, right? Come on. If you're at all seriously pissed about a women's gym, you're an asshole.
Yeah, you want to fight for your right to get in there and listen to a bunch of chatty Cathys?
Well, you're missing the point.
They're talking about me. I want to know what they're talking about.
Send all your letters to Lou Santini. Lou Santini.
Come on. Fight for your right. I need to know.
Oh, my
well, there was
God.
A guy who wanted to be a Hooters waitress years ago.
Bobby Brady wanted to join the Sunflower Girls in 1968. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do remember that.
Yeah, Lethal Weapon, very obscure. Bunch, Bobby Brady, on. Sunflower Girl references. You have to have a computer on standby with Wikipedia when you listen to your podcast.
All right, what have you been? I feel like I haven't seen you in forever, Lou.
Yeah, just Ice House a couple times.
A couple times, a few months ago.
Improv. Hanging out.
Oh, I saw you the other night at the Improv. That's right. You went on the 10 o'clock. I was on the 8 o'clock.
Yep.
What have you been doing? What have you been up to?
Oh, man. Just
performing. Really,
performing like crazy.
Good.
And, you know how it is. I mean, without boring people with the whole industry thing, but, you know, voice acting and new agents. And again, headshots next week and next week and, you know, commercial auditions.
I want to talk to you about
Are you using this head?
No, Murray's.
Good.
Switching. Murray's head.
The money
Murray's
maker.
Head, your torso.
That is an attractive man right there.
All the beer commercials you want.
Yeah. So it's for a Wendy's commercial that I'm going out for tomorrow. Get to play, you ready for this?
Mm-hmm.
An Italian.
What?
Wow. Yeah, I know. Santini playing the Italian guy. You know, I'm going to dig deep.
Did you ever do that Italian show that's in town?
With the Meatballs Comedy?
Yeah.
Only a few hundred times.
Ugh. First of all, worst name for a show ever.
Never doing it.
Second of all, I'm the least Italian you'll ever meet, and they used to call me to do it all the time.
Yeah, if your name ends in a vowel, like that sounds
Yeah, good, that sounds Italian. Let's go do it.
Well, I remember early on when the Latino Invasion and the Ricky Martin thing was big, and they had all the Latin comedy shows on. I did all of those.
Yeah, oh, me yeah. Too.
And I was the least Latino of them all, and I still do Latino rooms around Los Angeles. But what I stopped doing is trying to placate just to the audience, where I felt like back in the day I had to act more Latino just to do these things, and you know, you finally stop doing that and you just do what you do.
Yeah,
right.
It either works or it doesn't work, and that's it.
Yeah, I mean, I got booked on the Latino Comedy Showcase at the Ice House a couple dozen times. I'm like, and I would tell them, like, you know, I'm Italian, not
right.
Latin, but I mean, Italy is a Latin-based language. I mean, like, that's about as good.
Your
as
skin's
can.
Dark enough.
Yeah,
Holmes.
Right. Brown hair, brown eyes. Yeah. Whatever. He's Latin. You know.
I remember the Ventura Festival booked me on the international show one year, and I'm like, I was born in Tennessee and I grew up in Jersey. I'm not very internationally. Oh,
international.
Sorry.
What? Who else was on the show? For
I didn't do it.
What was?
You didn't do it.
What was the crux of that? Like, you had to.
You know, like
everyone's
like
from
Scottish,
somewhere else.
Like Francisco
Scottish
Ramos was probably on it. You know, some people.
So you were the American?
I guess so. Well, the great thing is I told him not international.
Please welcome the melting pot comedian, Murray.
Yeah, right.
I told him I'm not international. They're like, oh, okay, I'm sorry. We'll put you on the Jewish show. I'm like, hey, guess what else?
You know what's funny, though? Think about that, though, because in this PC world we're really living in more than ever now, where everyone is special, but yet they want to be treated the same. Mm. You know, I'm different. Respect that. But we're all the same. Like, pick one. All right. The gentrification, so to speak. It's like you just got anywhere else outside of comedy, a person would be offended. Like, you know what? You're on the international show. Wait, no, the Latin show. You know what? Whatever, the Jewish show. And you were like, fine, just I just want the stage time. I'm going to make people laugh.
Sure.
Anywhere else in the corporate world or whatever, all hell would break loose.
Yeah, well.
Right?
Yeah,
any other
so.
Job. Like, how dare you? Respect my heritage. I need a month.
Right.
You know? There's so many specialized shows anymore. Now it's like, how about Funny Comedians Night?
Well, you know what? It all started with putting the difference between clean comedy and comedy. That's what it all started, and it's snowballing into this bullshit now. Where okay, only comics with goatees, and because nobody wants to be offended, and I don't see a lot of I feel like you have to be a bigger name to get the backlash for non-PC shit. I don't get any. I've never got anybody. I take it back. I had one person in Chicago. I was talking about white trash outside of Seattle, and she yelled out, "Don't say that." And I'm like, "Why? It's offensive." And I literally said,
"To whom?
I literally sat down on my stool. And I said, "I can't believe I got to deal with this bullshit." All right, let me tell you something, lady. I'm from Memphis, Tennessee. I lived in a trailer park. All right, I got cousins who are in prison. I'm white trash. I can talk about it. She's like, it's offensive. And it started to get really tense. And so I was like, all right, you know what?
I'm getting tense hearing about it.
Okay, settle down. I said, you know what? Listen, I'm happy to talk about this after the show. I'm always willing to learn. If there's something offensive you want to talk
You're
about,
a better man than I am.
We can talk about it after the show.
Would have never spent time with that
Fuck
woman
that.
Ever.
Hold on. I said, I'll buy you a drink after the show. What are you drinking? She said, Bud Light.
Yeah.
I said, white trash. Got a huge laugh and walked off.
Zima. Good night, ladies.
Good night. Well, I mean, that's the thing. As comedians, if you do run into that offensive thing, you have to, on the one hand, you'd be like, I'm not going to even dignify that with an answer. So on the other hand, you want to, like, no. You're going to listen to this. You
know, yeah.
You have to weigh that, which is more important, being right or, you know, do I placate the one person who's disrupting the show and the other 99% that are digging it?
Right.
Or do I just, you know, just ignore it, you know?
My rule of thumb is if it disturbs half to three quarters, then I'll address it.
Of the room?
If it's just somebody in the front row that I hear, I'll talk over it until I have to say, you know what I mean?
I do this
because I've had people like... Because people in the back, especially at like the Chicago Improv that seats 500, you know, you're going along, you're like, hey, shut up, lady. And it's like, why is that guy being an asshole to that woman?
Right,
you know, because
right.
they can't hear right. or you know, that man or whatever. So if it disrupts a huge amount, then I will address it. Or if it keeps going, then I got to.
I just did the Comedy Store, right? Sam Tripoli was on stage.
Sure, of course.
And, you know, he's, come on, he's no holds barred.
I love Sam.
I respect his stuff. And some person in the back just, one of those, right? Uh-huh. And Sam said that, goes, I'd never understand it. Why would you come into a comedy club looking to be offended? He goes, that's like going to a strip club and the girl wants to give you a lap dance, and you just start playing defense. And I'm like, I couldn't stop thinking about that. That's exactly what it's like. So you go to a strip club, I don't like this nudity, this is offensive. And you go to comedy, can there be the one spot where anything goes, so to speak?
Yeah.
You know, and realizing it's not, I mean, yes, it's real and it's live and it's in front of you, but my philosophy has always been, if I say something, whether it's on stage or in person, that is offensive, okay, now what? You're offended. And by the way, people throw away around the word offended when they really mean is uncomfortable, or they're just, their mental synapses somehow disrupted.
Sure.
There's a world of difference between being offended and just like, what? Or confused or uneducated, something like that.
A knee-jerk reaction.
And just because you're offended doesn't mean you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah, but are comedy clubs going to change now? Are there just going to be clean comedy clubs and free freedom of speech comedy clubs?
No.
Because it seems like that's clubs, the direction that people don't even go to regular comedy clubs anymore because they do get offended on
that'll be an outside produced show. But as long as you're selling tickets, you can get up there and talk about the most horrendous stuff. The owners don't care. As long as the drinks are being sold.
Yeah.
Now, those outside stupid produced shows, I tweeted this not too long ago. Nothing says I'm more afraid of outside thinking than comedy in a church. Like, and I know, and listen, trust me, I know I'm missing a big fucking paycheck on those church gigs.
We've all done those gigs. I've done those gigs.
Oh, man. That church circuit right now.
I was squeaky clean a couple weeks ago in Thousand Oaks. No problem. Then I went and go did a guest spot later on and got to do whatever I want. I can work clean. I've done corporate. And I play the room. I've done biker rallies and I've done corporate events. You know, I mean, road stories. I did a gig. It was actually me, Tom, and I think Fraser Smith.
Connolly?
Yeah. I got us a gig. This has got to be 10 years ago. It was a corporate gig for 12 people, and you could tell they had the thing where like the men had to, it was like the old days of, what is it, AT&T, where the men could only wear black suits with white shirts and and the women had to have the skirts below the knee type thing. And it was at 12 noon on a Wednesday, and they were
AT&T?
No, I'm saying it was that, you could tell they had that dress code, like the real corporate conservative thing. And they, and I said, is this a squeak? It's 12 noon on a Wednesday. It was huge money. And I'm like, I thought there would be a lot of people. It was just these higher ups. They were doing their annual report meeting. Mm-hmm. And then afterwards, and now let's enjoy some laughter.
Oh, my God.
And they, anything went.
Oh, that's good.
They had to look conservative. You know, and I always ask, especially with corporate stuff, like, what are the rules? I want to, you know.
But people always say that bullshit. They say whatever you want.
Yeah.
Then the minute you do, that's when it all goes bad for you. And they're like, well, we can't have you back ever.
Right. Well, when I in those situations, because I've done a few of those, like this local comic, Jim Taylor, books a lot of really squeaky clean stuff. You and I have done it. And I did this country club, and it was a fundraiser for the Tustin something or other. And the woman was like, you can say whatever you want. I don't care. You can say whatever you want. I'm like, okay. Then they open the show with a prayer. And I'm like, bet I can't say whatever I want right now.
So I'm an atheist.
So, hey, I grew up the son of a preacher. Let me tell you why you're wrong. You know, like,
man.
But I prefaced it by saying, hey, listen, the woman who booked me said I could say whatever I want. And you guys just opened with a prayer. So let's do this.
Right.
And then I got a big laugh. I got everybody comfortable. And then I didn't go overboard. I just do what I did.
Well, you're standing there on stage. Edit.
No, I'm not even edit. I'm still talking. First of all, I'm not really that dirty anyway. Yeah. I just say fuck a lot.
Yeah. Well, there's another good point. You know, you've gone into some clubs like, oh, you can say whatever you want. Just don't say this word. So like, so you could do a whole series of bits about, I don't know, something really horrible. Pedophilia and not swear. And that's okay. You know,
That's what doesn't make sense.
I agree. It's like, you know, everyone has a different idea of what dirty is. I don't want to name the comedian's name because I don't know if I should be telling the story.
That's fine.
So
I have to bleep out Tom Connolly's name because he's a raging alcoholic, apparently.
He's highly functioning, though.
Yeah.
You got to give that to him.
Yeah, I can't wait to get him on the show. I wish he'd come out here.
So this comedian, he does a real big crowd work thing that's always his closer, and he makes sound effects.
Okay.
Okay. And someone in the audience was enthralled by that. They said, oh my God, how is he doing that? And this comedian heard that. So he went into the crowd, wireless mic, and he's like, are you showing this guy, I guess the CEO of the company, which is always great in corporate stuff because, you can make fun of the CEO, make him look foolish, whatever. And he was digging it, and he was like, I'm going to try. And he goes, like, just make this sound, whatever. And he went up to a woman in the audience and says, all right, try this, do this. And a woman in the audience pulled him aside after the show and said, "You can't tell a woman what to do in 2019. He literally
wow,
would just,
in the context of a comedy
in
show.
In a comedy show, just like, and people, he just picked this woman at random. It's like, all right, just you want to try it here? Do this.
Wow.
Because he didn't ask her. He told her, do this to make this sound effect. There was no content issues, whatever. It was, I'm like, now there's a person who I, in my opinion, has literally a perfect life. Because if that's the only problem you got it made. You're smooth sailing.
Yeah.
You have no issues. You have no problems.
Yeah. She's going to be crying her whiskey at her whiskey club later on tonight.
And her name is Lou.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't
blows
my
mind.
Every
once in a while, I don't get a lot. I don't get a lot of that fame. Maybe I'm not controversial. I don't know. Maybe I'm not offensive. I don't know.
Well, you said something about, they said once you get higher up, when you're a target. But I also think there's something to be said, you can get away with more when you're higher up.
Oh, you think so?
Yeah, sometimes. Because, like, think about a bit. You guys ever written a bit and you go, you know, I'm not famous enough to do this bit, or this bit would really work well if, for example, Chris Rock did it or someone bigger did it. Like, oh, I can see this person doing it, and maybe you don't use it. Not because you're afraid, just because you're just like, nah, it doesn't really fit in with my stuff.
I've done it, but not saying, oh, Chris Rock can do it. I would say, you know what? Danny Viapondo can do probably this will do for Dan. You know what I mean? It's somebody else.
Well,
I've got a bit that I love doing, but it got me fired off a cruise ship line in Seattle because it's the late show and they say, well,
hold on. Before you go, continue on that. Who got you that cruise ship line job?
Murray did, because Murray didn't show up for the audition and he gave the audition to me.
That's
And what
not
did Danny do with
true.
It? He
you
got himself fired
do
with it.
Didn't show. It's not that I didn't show
you
up.
You couldn't do it
I
or
couldn't
something.
Do it.
Yeah.
So I recommended you.
Yes.
There's a big difference.
Yes.
Can you tell us? Are you allowed to say what the bit was or in
the
general?
Bit, I do a bit on our fascination with murder, with all the murder television shows. So it's late night and they say, oh, adult show, do whatever you want.
Yeah.
When you
I've
do
done
whatever.
That. I've done
I,
that
so
live.
I do the bit and it does really well. If you get a complaint, and the cruise ship director was in the audience, and she said, and then I got my report back that said I was too informative and morbid. And
informative?
Too informative.
This is how you kill somebody.
I had my...
Step one, sharpen knife.
Find somebody you don't like.
My friend Sam Fedeli, I had his agent call and get my report from NCL. So when they got the report back, she goes, oh my God, it really says that you're too informative and morbid. And that's why I was fired.
You know what that
and
says?
And I've known you for years. I mean, I'm assuming the crowd was probably eating it up and loving it. And
it was great. I thought it was going good.
You know what that says to me? When you're too informative, that says the cruise director didn't like you for some reason.
Which
the entertainment
common,
director.
Yeah, common.
Which is, and that's what I don't like about cruise ships. You're not playing for the crowd. Yeah. You're playing for the entertainment
right.
director.
Right, and it's not like I'm up there giving a dissertation on
PowerPoint.
Cockle, you know, shell,
PowerPoint.
Cockle
murder by numbers.
Yeah, exactly. I'm doing a bit, and I'm talking about the information that leads to the punchline. So it's like,
It's called a setup, lady.
Yeah, yeah.
It's called a setup.
It's
called
a setup, dear. I mean, I'm doing, how many years? I mean, I'm on 21 years. How many years for comedy are you guys?
Oh, me, like 30.
Okay.
I've been in the game since 98.
Okay.
But in various forms, writing.
Right around the same time as me. To this day, I will never understand why, if you have a room full of people, even if there's just 10 people, and one person complains, club owners, bookers, entertainment directors, whatever, worry about the one person who complained as opposed to the 90%, for example.
That's what doesn't make sense.
It never
makes sense. Why does the one sensitive person control the majority?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
because it goes back to, now I'm just going to sound like a corporate shill, which I fucking hate, but it's going back to that old
depends on how much money that corporate shill pays.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
Considering I'm doing this for free.
Yeah,
fuck off. It goes back to back when I was waiting tables in restaurants. The managers would always tell me, if somebody enjoys their meal, they're going to tell their friend. If somebody doesn't enjoy it, they're going to tell 20 of their friends.
Yep.
That's what it all about. I don't say I agree
dicks.
With it, but people are dicks.
People are dicks.
Do you guys
exactly.
Yelp? I mean, do you do Yelp? I never have. I got too many things to do. Here's what I will do, though.
Wait, I look on Yelp if I'm going someplace new. I don't get on in Yelp.
I don't. I really go by word of mouth.
You know what
I write Yelp reviews, but I try to make them funny. So I'm just writing a paragraph with jokes.
He's over there crafting his Yelp bit.
Yeah. No, I am. I craft my Yelp.
Why don't you put a little more effort into that murder bit instead of your Yelp things? You won't get fired off a cruise line.
Because Yelp won't fire me. Yelp doesn't know who the hell I am.
Meanwhile, he's yelping him from his set. It's like too morbid and informative.
One star.
I will never eat these nachos again.
I mean, my whole thing is like, you know, I'm a big letter writer. Like, I'm wronged by a company or whatever. I write right, go directly to corporate.
Sure,
right?
Sure.
I do.
Yelp's the same thing.
I know.
Just in a lazier form.
Yeah. Okay, I agree with that. And I'm not judging if you go to Yelp. My whole thing is like, I want results. And also, if I have good service or a good product, I'm like, man, that was, you know what? I want someone to get a raise or get
their
day, a karma, you know, that whole thing too. And I just Yelp, I just have, going back to like reviews and stuff like that, I mean, I just never put any stock because I see one like, all right, great, good review. Oh, this person hated it. Clearly a fired employee. You know what I mean? You don't know.
Well, I'm pretty fair.
Most of the one stars are somebody saying, we couldn't find a place to park, one star. And you're like,
that's the restaurant's fault. Yeah.
Interesting enough, have you ever gone on a Yelp review of the Irvine Improv or any clubs you work?
No. I never really paid attention.
It's never about the comedian.
Really?
It's always about the service.
It's always about the service, the wait in line, the tickets. It's never about the comics. It's always, $12 for nachos. They hardly put any meat on it. One star has nothing to do with
the show.
Which
tells me those are the people who aren't really paying attention to the comedy show. No. They're texting or
free
talking.
Tickets.
Free tickets.
It's a free ticket society.
Yeah, it's a free ticket society, and they're paying a lot of money for those nachos.
That's the name of my next comedy album, Free Ticket Society. I've taken it.
I did read one review that had the comics, and it was, I think it was Ian Bagg's show, and I don't know why I think it was Ian Bagg's, but oh my god, Ian was hilarious, and the guy before him was funny, and the MC was funny also, or something. The comedians were hilarious, and the MC was funny also. like a differentiation between...
Well, they've been to a comedy show before.
Right.
You know, the MCs sometimes are just getting attention of people ordering their food and drinks.
But I'm just saying there was a different... Like, for the audience, they're trained that the MC is not a real comic.
Yeah, and we've all hosted a million shows. It's like, and we all know that being the MC is probably the toughest job.
Oh, absolutely. I've said this a thousand times.
Does New York still do it the opposite way, where the headliner goes up to open the show and then he brings up and then closes the show? Is that still happening?
That's not New York. New York does... That's very Australia, very England.
Canada did stuff like
Canada
that.
Canada does it. New York's been doing the check drop spot where the MC, because I just worked with worked with Robert Kelly, who's a New York comic. Yeah. I just worked with him at the Tempe Improv.
What's the check drop spot? I think I know where you're going with that.
They drop the checks and then you've got 10 minutes of dead air.
So what they do in New York is the headliner stops, they drop the check, and the MC comes on and does 10 or 15 minutes to close out the show. So the headliner doesn't have to deal with the check drop spot.
If they drop late, then your closing bit is going to blow.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's happened a few times. Then you go, I've got no momentum here. They've just squashed it.
Or it's when they drop in the beginning, because I've done that.
The beginning, I don't mind.
Oh, I do.
But right at the end is the worst.
Because when they drop in between the middle and me going on, then I got 15 minutes of just trying to get them.
I used to have a bit that I didn't like as much. So the minute I started seeing the checks drop, I would do that 7-minute bit because I didn't like it. I was like, well, who cares who laughs at this?
What a commitment to quality.
Yeah. I did this the other day, and I want your comics opinion on this. I was at the Oxnard Improv? No, Ontario Improv. And the first night, the sound guy was like, give it up for your host and MC for the evening, Murray Valeriano. And I wasn't hosting or emceeing, but I went up, I did my 15 minutes, and I brought up Steve. And I didn't think anything about it. I figured, and then the next show, he's like, give it up for your host and MC for the evening, Murray Valeriano.
Well, he says that every single night.
I know. So I went up to him, I go, look, I'm this is probably petty, and...
It is.
Okay, you know where I'm going?
Well, you're saying you're tag team.
But go ahead.
I go, I'm not hosting an emceeing tonight, so if you could just say, bring up your first comic... you know, this is your first comic, and I don't care if you say host an MC. It's not like I'm going to go up and kick
off
the microphone.
Which is redundant, by the way.
You kind of do. You kind of do.
I know I care.
You do a little bit. Otherwise, this wouldn't be a story right now. You kind of do. So go ahead and finish this petty story of yours.
But I mean, host an MC, first of all, semantically, that's the same word.
Well, yeah,
it's the same
true job.
You're host, an MC, an opener, and how many ways can you say the same thing? You know,
I mean,
please welcome the very petty Murray Valeriano.
That's how
he gets up there. It's like, you know, that applause really was not loud enough.
Yeah, yeah.
And listen, so
very petty.
It was petty. So he didn't do it for the rest of the weekend. So
let me ask you this.
So I won anyway.
Wait. Let me ask you this. Were your sets any better or worse? Were you funnier?
No.
Look, I can agree on the one.
I admitted it was petty.
I think that,
and I told the guy before you guys jump on my ass.
No, you asked if it was petty, and I said yes, it was petty.
I said I wanted your opinions, and I went up to the guy and said, I know this is petty. And if you, and then I said, I'm not hosting an MC tonight. If you can just say your first comic, and if you do say host an MC, I don't care. I'm not going to flip a bitch.
All right,
that's how I presented it.
I know, I'm
looking like an asshole right now.
I appreciate you admitting that it was petty.
I'm taking all this out.
I appreciate you admitting that it was petty. But on the other hand, we just said audiences have this mindset like, oh, well, the first guy, he's not a real comic, right? The first comedian, male or female, they're not the real comic. So in your head, you might have been thinking, it's like, you know, they're going to get in their heads like, oh, well, this doesn't count. So I can talk and text and place my food order and not pay attention until the person after you went on.
Sure.
So yeah. I understand that rationale.
Suck a dick, Pondo.
I understand that rationale because
Thank you,
as a comedian, you want every advantage you have at least before you get up. After that, it's on you. But, you know, would you like to have anyone introduce you hypothetically and go, all right, come to the stage for the very first time ever? You know,
right.
You're like, oh, shit. You know,
his
first time here at this club, outsider. I mean, you don't want to hear that. I mean, the audience, whether you don't want the audience to hear that.
Sure.
Because you don't want them to have any kind of preconceived notions about your skill set, your level of ability.
Here's what I stopped doing. I stopped giving people an intro about me because I figured I used to do an intro, you know, troops and right. been on Comedy Central and what have you. I quit doing that. I just say, just please welcome Danny Viapondo, because if you're funny, then you don't need all that bullshit to get that big round of applause. I don't think.
I agree.
So I just go up just to my name now. Just say, welcome, Danny Viapondo.
And you don't want to give him a good credit, and then for, you know, all of a sudden you have a bad night. Like, this guy was on fucking Comedy Central or whatever. It's like, this guy sucks. You know,
well, right.
You know what I mean?
But there's so many people that rely on that thing that you go, it's crap.
One of the few things I agree with Bill Maher on, and I don't even know if I agree with it anymore, is he said your intro is part of your act.
I do agree with that.
And I don't know if I agree with that anymore, but I agreed with it for a very long time. I just think there's too much emphasis, getting back to my opening spot, on differentiating between an MC and a comedian.
Isn't the intro just for you, though? Or is it for the audience? Does the audience really care about the intro? Or is it just for you yourself as a comic?
That I don't know. That I think you're making a different point than I'm trying to make.
Now, by the way, when you said you disagree with me, I agree with you in that your intro is up in terms of credits, but I say your performance starts while you're being introduced, I should say. How you approach the stage, your energy level as you walk into the stage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, come on, we've all been doing this a long time. Hypothetical, let's say the host brings you up. Don't you hate it when the host brings you up? Give it up for, you know, Danny Viapondo, and the MC leaves the stage before you're on the stage and there's an empty stage.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know.
Who does that?
I see that once a week.
Oh, really?
Once a week. If that's the lesser experienced MCs. Give it up for Joe Smith. And they leave the stage. Like, stay up there and also, you know,
shake hands,
eye contact, create that illusion that you have this community and this friendship. I mean, we're all pros. If I brought one of you guys up, I would give you, one, a great introduction. Two, I would wait until you made your way through the crowd, make eye contact,
obviously,
shake your hands. You know what I mean? Because that does set up, like, wow, these guys do know each other. They really are friends.
Right.
They really do have respect. And there's that energy level. But the comedians that come up there, eyes down, messing with the microphone before they even say anything, yada, yada. Your intro starts from the time you're...
I agree. And also, I will blame the MCs also on this differentiation between an MC and a comedian, because a ton of MCs will end their set and go, are you ready for your first comedian?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's on them.
What the fuck are you, man?
Yeah, right.
What the fuck are you?
Yeah,
like,
right.
You just fucking shot yourself in the foot. So I see where I don't know. I guess maybe because I MC'd for so long.
There's something called showmanship in show biz. There has to be. You want to create that illusion like, hey, I'm just like you folks in the audience. We're doing jokes about our lives.
Right.
On the other hand, frankly, I'm better than you. And I use that term loosely in that I'm up here. I'm the person you paid to come see, so I should be giving you a show, not just, I'm just going to go up here and work some shit out and just, you know, half-ass it, so to speak.
Right.
The audience deserves a show, whether there's 10 of them, 10,000 of them, it's a Tuesday night or the Saturday night show, whatever.
I agree.
And that's, I think that's, being professional is not just a matter of, oh, I'm a paid comic. No, it's how you conduct yourself on and off stage and before and after your set. And
I've said it before, man. I've had some of my greatest shows in front of eight people.
Yeah, me too.
So much fun, man. And since I started headlining 5-6 years ago, I've been seeing a lot more. About 9-person show, so
yeah, well, look,
getting really good at that.
I just did a show last night. There was 26 people in the audience the week before at that club, standing room only.
Yeah.
Close to 200, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's easy to, we know this, it's easy to kill in front of a sold out room.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Adam Hunter was the host last night, and he made a really good point. He leans over to me and goes, you know, this is the comedy special I wish they would put on TV. Watch it. This is where comedians are tested whether they're good or not.
Right, right.
Can you, it's you know, can you kill? Can you even get good laughs with you know, a 1/10 filled room?
Yeah, yeah.
That's where the skill comes.
No, absolutely. What's
his
face?
Who did that in New York? The I can't think of the guy's name. It's been around forever. Alonzo? Ted?
Ted Alejandro?
Ted Alejandro? Is it?
How come I have more of a Latin accent than you do?
Because I'm 50% English too.
Okay, yeah. I'm 0% Latin.
Alejandro,
there you go.
See?
Come on,
Ted, it's not Ted Alejandro, is it? It's
Ted Alejandro, I think.
All right, can we, I want to know what the story
anyway,
is.
He did his special.
Be quiet.
I need to know.
He did his special in a small bar with 50 people in there, 50-60 uh-huh. people in there.
But it was packed, but still 50-60 people.
Yeah, but it wasn't like a giant audience where they're just raw applause
breaks. Or a paid audience like a lot of these theaters.
It was
are.
Hit and miss, but it was all funny and it was very genuine and very authentic as we know as comics.
I respect that. I mean, Dane Cook had that one special he did at the Laugh Factory long after he had reached his peak, after both of his parents had died and everything else. He'd gone through a lot of drama. And I remember thinking, I really like this intimacy mm-hmm. level. Mm-hmm. You know, I like you
Ray
said,
Romano's
some of the
last Netflix. Did you see that?
No, I haven't.
He starts off at the Comedy Cellar, the small place.
Yeah.
Then he does 30 minutes there. Then they show him walk off stage, walk around the corner to the other Comedy Cellar, go right on stage, do a second 30 minutes. It's nonstop. It's actually pretty cool.
That's, I haven't gotten all the way through it yet, but
it's on my list. I got to see that.
I like. Did you see Judah Friedlander's last special?
No.
It was all at the Comedy Cellar. I think it was all at the Comedy Cellar, but it was cut between like 37 shows. Oh, it was fantastic. It was great.
Wow.
But he didn't do it because he was cutting in and out. That was his plan.
All the good bits and just.
Yeah, yeah. No, that was his plan. And he was doing a lot of audience work and improv. You know, I like that special a lot.
How did crowd work translate for a special? You don't see a lot of crowd work.
Pretty good.
Specials.
I mean, check out, again, bringing up Ian Bagg. Check out Ian Bagg.
Well, that's his
specials?
Bread and butter, though.
I mean,
that's his bread and butter.
That guy does it not better. You know, he does it better than everybody out there. Yeah. But it translated really well, I think.
Quick question, because I've had two comedians tell me this over the last month that they hate doing
pretty.
Crowd work. They hate. Yeah, they said. I said, "Oh, I hate doing crowd work." You know, I'm like, "Really? I mean, you guys, I love."
No, I like doing crowd work. I don't do a lot of it, but I like doing it.
Yeah, now, if I'm middling for somebody, I don't do it.
Right. It's
I'm doing my hour.
Called respect, and I get.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to bleed the mind dry, so to speak.
Right.
And the headliner's like, "Great."
Unless I have to.
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
Like I had a chatty person in the front. And,
when MCs go up there and do nothing but crowd work, I lose my mind. I'm like, what are you doing?
I had a chatty person.
I
had a chatty person in front of Robert Kelly I had to shut down. Now, if I was doing my hour, I would have just gone back and ripped on her for, you know, go do some bits, come back, rip on her, go do some bits, come back. But I just shut her down and I moved on.
Got it.
There's a little respect in the hierarchy, I think.
Yeah. It's so funny. I did a gig in Thousand Oaks, right? And
sixth.
I got rave reviews. You know, the guy who booked me, he's like, dude, they loved you. But one woman, like, here it comes. One woman.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Well, one woman wants to meet you and give you lots of free. No. Yeah. It's all, she's like, one woman had a problem with your stance on guns. I literally have no bits on guns. I've never owned a gun, fired a gun, and frankly, if I was a cop, I'd be out of bullets on the first day.
Right.
Right. I'd be, where's the requisition form for it? And my piece is kind of worn out. I need another gun. And I go, dude, I think they had me confused with one of the other comedians because I had to do my set and jet right away. I usually would hang, but I had a very early call time the next day. And he goes, no, I said, I'm being honest with you. I don't have any bits about guns. And it's like, yeah, but they just don't want you. I'm like, you got the wrong comedian. So I finally figured it out. It wasn't a bit about guns. Have you ever heard me do my bit about the combo? You know, all right.
I walk out when you go on stage.
Yeah, thank you. when well, so anyway, what
we're
it was
in the bar when
what it was here, and of course I'm gonna repeat the bit. I'm gonna lose some in delivery here, but I do the bit. It's about a woman who's just stupid. She orders a hamburger at a fast food joint, and the guy's like, "Do you want the combo?" And she was like, "I don't get it. What's the combo?" And I lose my mind. I'm like, "What? Brussels sprouts and Ovaltine? What do you think the combo is? Your first date? What goes with a hamburger?" And I said, it was a tag. I said, look, I've never shot anybody. I don't even own a gun. I said, but don't you wish you had a gun like with a silencer? You could just walk up, pew, just kind of catch her, walk her and lead her again. That was the problem she had. That was my gun stance.
So she had a problem with murder.
She had a problem with murder. Apparently, I'm endorsing it's okay to shoot people at the fast food restaurant.
That, so she in her entire life has never gotten angry about waiting in line.
Right.
Her herself.
Right.
Ever.
Right. That's my point. It's a 25-minute set, and I'm not being humble here saying that I killed. Everything went great.
No, you're not being humble.
No. Yeah, I'm not petty, at least, you know. But now I'm being petty, though. But, I mean, that's the kind of stuff that just makes you insane. I'm like, are you kidding? And I made a point. I'm like, I had to do another gig the following week, and I was told squeaky clean. And I'm like, do I nut up and, like, fuck them? I'm doing this bit anyway, or do I, like, I just want to hear that shit again. Do I drop it?
No, right. You do it.
Yeah, and yeah, I did it. And there was no issues.
Here's what happened to me. I was in the Comedy Spot, and this was the last time I was
Arizona?
There. Yeah. 4 or 5 months ago, and a woman was upset at me making fun of her because she was in the front row on her phone, like Marie is right now.
You lose all.
Yeah.
You lose. You're on the phone in front row, you're out.
So I tease her. I tease her a little bit. I'm not being directly mean
insulting
to her, but she would keep saying these things because she was drunk. So she comes up afterwards and wants to give me a mouthful. And I said, look, you need to be quiet. You don't talk to me about it. If you've got a problem with the show, go talk to the owner.
Good man.
Go talk to the owner. Don't talk to me about it. Go talk to the owner. File a formal complaint if you want. Do whatever you got to.
But yelp.
Stop, but stop talking to me about it. So I finally had to say that 4 times for her just to shut up and walk away. But it was like, don't tell me about it. You know, you were on your phone in the front row. Go file
you're
a formal complaint.
On your phone in the back row at a comedy show. You know,
right.
We've all heard the Bobby Slayton story, right? With the punchline of Atlanta. Really? I thought everyone knew that story.
Well, tell us, and we're going to wrap it up on this.
Okay. Woman in front row. She was.
You don't have to rush it. It's fine.
There by herself, and I guess the rest of her party had not arrived yet.
Mm-hmm.
But she was in the front row on her phone saying, yeah, I'm here. You know, I'm like, you know, the show's starting. You know, like, and Bobby Slayton, come on. I mean, it's Pitbull
the
comedy.
Pitbull
right.
Yeah.
And he was actually, from what I heard, very patient. I was so mad because this happened a week after I had seen Richard Jenny perform there. I'm like, I just missed this.
So a while ago.
Yeah, it was a while ago. And he finally said, would you please get off the phone, you fat C word. I don't say that word a lot. But and you call a woman the C word, that's, you know, come on. And she goes,
oh, fat, though, they're fine.
Right. So she got up and left, like, right, and walked down the aisle, whatever. And he let her get all the way to the exit of the show. We're going, wait, all right, come back. I'm sorry. But just, come on, man. Wait, we got a packed house here. You're on your phone. You're disrupting. People paid, you know, $35 a ticket. I guess from what I understand, he spent like 5 minutes seducing her back. Like, come on. And he said, you know what? I'll be buying your tickets and your drinks, and it's on me. Just promise to be quiet. And she goes, okay. And she sits down, and he goes, you got to at least give me cunt. And I guess from what I've heard, she just laughed her ass off. She's like, I give up.
Oh, all right.
She's like, I give up. I did a show. Remember when Jokers used to be here at Commerce, at the Commerce Casino?
Yeah, I used to do it all the time.
I had great times at that show. Usually casino gigs like that, especially, you know, when those ones are like Vegas, you're like, ugh.
Right.
Woman in the front row on her phone talking louder than I'm talking to you guys. And so I said, are you on the phone really? Like talking? She goes, I'm on the phone with my son. In my head, I'm thinking, little boy, okay, I'm not going to cause a stink. And I said, how old's your son? And she goes, 21. I go, give me the phone. So I said, who is this? And I put it on speaker, and I'm right on the mic, you know, whatever his name was. You know, John, I'm like, John, I'm here. Your mom's at a comedy club, and she's being a really bad, you know, customer and audience member. And she's also here with someone who's not your father. Bink, and I hang up, and I put my phone not only down my pants, down in my underwear. And I left it there for my entire 45 minutes. And with a speakerphone on, you can hear, you know, Bob, coming out of phone down by my nuts or whatever. And, you know, and I said, what did we learn in front of it? She's like,
we learned that you like that voice down by your nuts.
She goes, I will never use my phone at a show again, I promise. Right. And she was actually pretty cool about it.
Well, we learned that you keep your mic where I can see you the whole time today. Hey, guys, I have to go pretend I know something about baseball. At my kid's game.
Danny, you have anything informative maybe you could share with
us? Oh, something informative. Check out my Dry Bar comedy special. It's out right now. Just go onto YouTube, Danny Villalpando, and you can get all my Dry Villalpando Pando. Hit YouTube. You'll find the Dry Bar Comedy Special. It's hilarious.
Have you thought about changing your last name for showbiz?
I almost changed it to Danny Villa, but I should have went with my original name.
Danny Pando?
My legal name is Damasio. I should have went with Damasio Villa. Sounds kind of cool, right?
It is pretty
Damasio
cool.
Damasio Villa.
You sound like a boxer or a baseball player.
Yeah. You should have gone Damasio Villa Pando.
Villa Pando's too long, but Damasio Villa has more of a flair to it.
Well, yeah, never stop the, you know, I can't even say his name, the Greek guy,
Economopoulos.
Yeah, that's hard to, I respect that he kept his name.
Stacky.
Stacky Economopoulos.
Yeah, his name's Stacky.
That's hard.
I think it's pronounced Alejandro.
Yeah.
All right, we found out where you are. Where can we find you?
LouSantini.com, Instagram, Facebook, yada, yada.
All that stuff
in my podcast, too, Amateur Nation, and my book on Amazon, Amateur Nation.
All right, awesome.
Thanks,
excellent. Hey, guys, Murray V on at Murray V on Twitter, Murray V Comedy on Instagram, Murray Valeriano, Facebook, Murray Valeriano Comedy, which I get a lot of action on Facebook, so go there. That's it. Thanks for, we missed the week when Brody Stevens died, so we'll be doing a special thing for Brody coming up soon. Thanks for all the kind words. The listeners have been, you know, because they're fans of Brody also, so it was very nice. And very nice words for you guys, for me and my wife at the Oscars. Thank you so much for that. We'll get into that. I talked about it on the episode we lost last week, so we'll talk about that some other time. But thank you for all the support and everything like that. Come see these guys when they come to your town. They're very funny. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Murray.
You want to know about life on the road? It's
booze, tacos, angry dwarfs, strippers waving guns,
and
bees, fights, candle flights, running with the runs,
and
blacklists, bounce checks, great, a bachelorette, trunks in the front, making out through your set,
and
middle acts doing blow more, missing merch,
and
drive the rental car past another mega church,
and
juice, keys, vagina, fist, your cell phone is gone, one big Law and Order marathon.